Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and the Back of the Nest podcast. I'm joined in the studio with Nick Gillard and James Howard. An absolute pleasure to see them both because it has been 2 weeks. And it may have been 2 weeks, but it has been a brilliant 2 weeks for the Eagles because I didn't get to see you last week and I'm gutted because they went up to Manchester, they went up to Old Trafford and they absolutely got the result, didn't they? A fantastic win against Man United and they also got the win against Aston Villa this weekend. So much to discuss. James, I know you want to start us all off, but I said you got that win in Manchester last year, albeit against City. Now, Manchester's just a good place for you. You've done the red half this time. James, how pleased are you?
Oh, fantastic. Over the moon, mate. Absolutely. I heard you and Johnny Burrow earlier, and you were saying how negative Back of the Nest were, and I think I was the only one that actually said that I was backing Roy.
Never actually. You were surprised, weren't you, at Hambo's when he was on and saying
I mean, there's been a few other people that have shown a bit of negativity as well. But, you know, I said that, you know, he's doing a good job and with the resources that he's got. And even the journalists have recognised that, you know, we have had the best results in the year, you know, apart from Man City, Liverpool and Arsenal, I believe. And I felt that, you know, all we've got to do is just try and sort of, you know, keep calm and let Roy bed in the new players. I thought we could, I didn't believe really we would get a result at Manchester United, but I thought we could do.
Makes it all the sweeter.
Yeah, I know you thought we were going to get an absolute thumping. But
thanks.
I'll just sort of remind the listeners. But
cheers.
But I did say to the guy, I said, you know, I wasn't sure about Pogba, and he was the one that got robbed for our winner in the middle of midfield, and they weren't taking their chances. So very happy days. I was absolutely over the moon, especially with the last couple of results.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to hold fire on the Roy loving at the moment. You've got to remember the reason we weren't here last week was because we were stood watching a completely inept performance against a reasonable Colchester United side. We looked bereft of ideas. The only time we started to look like we wanted to do anything was when King Ayew came on, because he just made a difference. He's been the difference this season. But you look at that game, you look the Man United game, we won. We were very, very lucky to win that game, and I'll take the 3 points anyway. Man United should have beaten us. They didn't. Doesn't matter. We got the 3 points. I think that might be papering over a few cracks. I'm a little bit more positive than I was before.
It's a modest opinion. You did get the 3 points. It might be papering over the cracks, but you're going to take it in defence of the thumping that I thought Man United would give Crystal Palace. It's why we love football. What a beautiful thing. When a team plays so poorly against Sheffield United, then you went to Man United, who were sort of on a good run themselves, beat Chelsea 4-0 on the opening day, and then it doesn't matter if they played well. You did get the 3 points. Another penalty miss. This time it was Rashford. And, you know, Palace have nicked it. And we've seen also what goals, we know what it does for a striker's confidence. Ayew, King Ayew, as Nick now refers to him as, he got the goal against United. And now he scored against Villa this weekend. Just a brilliant turnaround for Crystal Palace. But although you may not have predicted a thumping, one you didn't see coming 2 weeks ago, did you, James?
No. And, you know, I'll take the credits for getting the
win. For those two
predicting
performances.
That. But I will admit to my mistakes. I would not have signed Ayew based on what happened last season. I think I said on here, I was surprised that we signed him. I stand corrected. I mean, he has come back a completely different player. Whether it's because he's much fitter than everyone else, because he played in the African Nations Cup and perhaps he didn't have a long rest, so he came back fit already. But he's playing out of his skin, and, you know, he looks, you know, as if he needs a drug test or something, because I don't know where it's come from. But to be honest with you,
single-handedly kept Who was it he kept up with his goals one season?
Swansea
it might have been. Yeah, he was ace for them. So yeah. I think, yeah, you do need to eat humble pie, definitely.
I do, and I think a few other people do as well. But, you know, and he's really wanting to play. You know, the first game against Everton, which was a 0-0, he had a fantastic game, and he was brought off by, and I wanted to bring this up, he was brought off by Roy Hodgson. And, yeah, I'm still questioning Roy. I'm not 100% sure, but he's doing a good job at the moment. There's nowhere near am I wanting him out, that's for sure.
What is fans' biggest question or concern with Roy then? When you say, oh, you know, you're saying you're not fully on board the Roy loving, you've still got questions. Mm. What is the big number one concern with Roy?
We only seem to have one way of playing, although that changed a bit on Saturday, and we'll get into that. We don't seem to have a plan B. But then on Saturday, the players seem to be rotating quite a bit, a la Barcelona. We'll talk about that when we come to the Villa game, because I want to talk about Kouyaté there. I don't know. We were just so bereft of ideas on Tuesday. And then you look at the Sheffield United game. It seems like we don't know how to take games to other teams.
I think Roy struggles at times to read the game in the way maybe sometimes a player needs to be changed or he needs to change the system during a game. I think he's a bit of a hesitator. I don't know if he can make it. He doesn't make a decision that well. He's not that confident, I don't think. He just sits back and lets things happen. I mean, you know, Ayew was brought off against Everton for Zaha, and then, you know, I felt that he should have stayed on and Benteke should have come off. Benteke did come off finally for Connor Wickham. And then again, and the supporters might have noted this because I did, just literally a minute or two before Ayew scored the weekend against Villa, he was just about to bring him off for Benteke. Just as well he didn't, because he went on and scored.
But football can change in an instant, can change in a second, James. But, you know, the grass isn't always greener. Before I come on, you may have heard I was talking to Martin Allen, who was on Drive on Love Sport. Every day you can catch Martin Allen. And Martin's someone I'm a real big fan of, not only as a person, but I think he talks a lot of football sense. He's been a manager. He's been in and around a game. But he said, why aren't Palace fans a fan of Roy? Or, you know, because you can want for something or wish something. Be careful what you wish for, because you can't, you know, always say you're safe in the Premier League. But with Roy, you're going to get those wins, you know. 2 weeks ago, it was, oh, what's Roy doing now? You're up there at the top, albeit it's four games. Roy, you know what you get. And there is a danger that you wish for something else. Are fans being a little bit greedy here?
I think so. And I think you've got to look back to sometimes, you know, look at Charlton, what happened to them. You know, they had probably about 7 years in the Premiership off the top of my head. And then, you know, they wished them changing management. Personally, if you said, am I happy with Roy? Out of 10, 10 being very, very, very happy, I'd say I'm pretty much 7, 8 out of 10 at the moment. You know, unless...
But at the moment, James, is it too fickle, you know, just because you're on the back of two wins?
No.
And Nick's saying, look, we can't ease the flip side. Let's not get too carried away, because after the international break, we could have 2-3 defeats on the spin. That's football, the roller coaster up and downs. In the bigger picture, taking away those wins, those losses, would it still be 7, 8 out of 10 for Roy?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily, but what I am not the person that just emotionally has this roller coaster of, like, sack him, keep him, sack him. You know, if I think somebody, maybe we should look at maybe changing a manager, there's got to be a consistent a number of losses for me to think, do you know what, maybe something's not working here. Maybe 4 defeats in a row or 5 defeats in a row, plus leaking goals, not just leaking the odd one and losing 1-0. I think at the moment I'm thinking, yeah, he's doing a good job.
Nick, you 7, 8 out of 10, where do you stand?
Yeah, it's the consistency. When we're good, we're really good. But when we're bad, we're crap.
Two extremes, there's no in the middle.
Two extremes, there's no in the middle.
What are you out of 10 then, Nick? I know you're not on the Roy loving train, but where do you stand if you're on the platform waiting?
I'd say about 7. That was good. Look,
you
even smiled at that.
Well, you
yourself.
Just said you're not on the loving. I'll take a 7 out of 10.
10 out of 10 if you're really
my
on
my brother
the
love might train. Only say he likes me 4 out of 10, so if it's a 7, I'm delighted.
Yeah, no, he's all right. I mean, I don't want him... I dread what would follow. Who's
this is it.
There?
The grass isn't always greener, is it, Nick?
It isn't. Roy's getting on. We need to be looking at the next manager. I dearly hope that...
He's not bringing himself on as a sub. He's all right to get on, ain't he? There's no, he doesn't need to get, you know. What's age got to do with a manager, Nick?
Yeah, I know. But, you know, how long can you keep in in a high pressure game. He's the oldest manager in the league. I'm not dissing older people.
Ferguson was years of experience, a wealth of experience in this league. You know how, and he's managed at international level. He's managed in Serie A. He's managed abroad. Not a lot of British managers can say that, at least.
Yeah, and as I've always said, when Ofsted come around your school, they look in the books and the results, and you look at the form table for this year. We come third. And somehow, having it, the problem is for Palace fans, unless you go to the away games, particularly last season, you don't see any of it, because all our success has been away of late. So it's a bit of a weird thing for us, because we're seeing rubbish at Selhurst. Everybody is forking out to go around the country and watch are getting a good deal, unless you go to Sheffield.
I know that was the case last year, but could it be changing? Because the season is still in its infancy. You did get that win at home this weekend, so maybe the home form. And we're seeing goals are everything for a striker's confidence. Wins are everything for a team's confidence. You see it, you get one win, you get the second win, you get the third win. Maybe the international break has come slightly at the wrong time for Crystal Palace. We'll talk about that. But obviously, in any football game at any level, James, you have to take your chances. I think it was one of the first times Crystal Palace had an attack against Man United. They took that chance. Then they were the team that popped up with a winner in stoppage time. But, you know, is that what Crystal Palace are capable? If we just create more, we can put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, on paper, they're a much stronger team than us, Manchester United. So quite clearly, Roy's going to go up there and he's the sort of manager that's going to say, you know, we've got to be careful. We've got to keep it very, very sort of not
cautious.
Negative, but cautious. Yeah, that's the word. And try and counterattack and play to our strengths. And that's exactly what he did. And that's what I would expect from Roy. But at home, we have to obviously try and improve from last season. And I think that's what Roy's doing at the moment. And I was impressed with the game at the weekend, because I felt, although it was 1-0, I felt it could well have been 3-0.
What was great about the Man United game, statistically, Joel Ward, the immense Joel Ward, who still hasn't got a chant. Palace fans, Joel Ward needs a chant, okay?
Or King Ayu Prince Joel Ward? Could we go with that?
Maybe, but a chant. Even if it's to the tune of Jolene. I ain't going to sing it now, but
oh,
you know, I don't
want
to lose listening. But Joel Ward running down the wing or something. be brilliant. Statistically better than Wan-Bissaka. Who needs Aaron, hey?
Oh, a strong, bold shout. James, I want to touch upon something you mentioned there, that, you know, at home we do have to go for teams more. I understand it when we're going away to Man United, there's a certain tactic we have to play. But you don't just want to play a style of football away from home and a style of football at home. Surely Roy will change his game plan for every opponent. He'll tailor it to that, whether it's home or away, whether it's, you know, you have to tailor it to the team you're facing.
I hope so. But what I felt from the game against Villa is it's a game that we have to really go out and try and win. And I did feel that we did get off to a good start. We were on the front foot from the off, and I felt we dominated the game, pretty much most of it. And 1-0, I felt it could well have been 3-0. So in that, I think last season at home, we may not have dominated the games as much. So that, for me, was a big improvement at the weekend compared to last season's home games. Now, I think we got Wolves the next home game, and that probably is also another winnable game, especially as we beat them 2-0 at their place last season.
It will be a winnable game, and I'll tell you why later.
So we need to carry on and say to the boys, look, you know, off on a front foot, straight off, we've got to win this, we've got to really go for it, and not maybe sit back as much as we did last season. And if we create the chances that we did on Saturday, then perhaps we might win 3-0, 2-0. But I'm happy with 1-0. If it ends up 1-0,
well,
who cares?
The feeling has certainly changed. Well, it was 1-0 this weekend. Crystal Palace beating Aston Villa. It's safe to say there are a few incidents in the game, and we're going to be looking at them next.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and Nick Gillard. We, of course, are talking all things Crystal Palace. We just looked at that fantastic win up in Manchester against Man United. Now, though, we turn our attention to the weekend just gone with another victory, this time being Aston Villa. It was at home. It was a clean sheet. It was 3 point. But the game had its incidents. It had a bit of drama, especially at the end. First, though, let's talk about the victory and talk about that clean sheet in our Crystal Palace look. James, how pleased were you with the performance?
Yeah, I was really pleased. First of all, I've always said that we start with clean sheets, especially at the beginning of the season, so happy with that. Dominated the game. It's, in my opinion, we dominated the game. I'd say 80% of it, 90% of it. And we definitely could have taken a few more chances. We didn't, but that's
22 shots.
Yeah,
Palace had.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah,
same as Man United.
So yeah, we could have taken a few more chances, and we nearly, obviously, you know, conceded at the end, which was very unfortunate. But we need to start taking these chances. But you've got to create them first, and that was the positive thing that we played early on in the season, and we have created a number of half chances, and we've got a player up front that can score goals.
Well, that's what winning does for morale, because the last couple of weeks when I spoke to you both, it was, we're not creating enough chances. And that, just that win alone against Man United, it's benefited the team so much that, you know, you played with that freedom, you know, not so much pressure hanging over you. You were creating chances. Now the problem is, we're not clinical enough. We're not putting them away, but that will come because you still got the win. Is that the case, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted halfway through the first half how pleased I was that we were getting crosses in. It's just a shame that Benteke and Wickham were on the bench, not to meet them. Okay, we've got other headers. Is that word, headers? We've got other headers that could.
I know what you mean.
It, yeah. So yeah, that was a bit weird that we were finally doing what fans had been screaming out for ages, is get decent crosses in. I disagree with James in the first 10 minutes. I thought we were very, very slow out of the box, especially Wilf. Who, it wasn't until he got fouled, he actually won a foul for something. And there was a little bit of a ruckus, not too much, not, you know, anything to get worried about.
He was 3-4 on him at the time. They were marking him out of the game, but he laughed about it. With, I actually think he thrives in those situations, doesn't he?
Yeah, you're saying that. I was watching the Arsenal-Tottenham game the other day, and one of the other games, but all the wingers have two or three players around them now, so it's not just Wilf. So I will kind of take away from his skill there.
A key man, you know, who makes the team tick. You know, if Crystal Palace are going to be dangerous, you know, they're going to look to go through Wilf and teams, you know. I'm sure when they do their team scouting reports, if we can shut down one man, it's not half the job, but it's a good part of it, isn't it?
But what we haven't seen of late is Wilf getting the ball and running with it. And we used to love it, didn't we, there? When it, same with AJ. AJ used to get the ball and run and score. Wilf used to get the ball, run and score or create a goal. Once he got into that mode, that's when we clicked, and Villa didn't know what to do with us. Got to also give big credit to Bicente Gaita, the goalkeeper. Statistically, okay, we're only 4 games in, but never mind.
He's had a few good performances, though. That's what
he's made some brilliant saves, and that gives the defence confidence. Now you're talking about the defence. We had our worst defence on paper at the start of the year, yet we have only conceded 2 goals in them 4 games. That is fantastic.
That's a stat
Kelly.
You want. Chelsea have conceded 9.
We've had Kelly. We've had Dan. Oh, I had a little shout into John Terry's ear about the own goal he scored against us, Nick, at the end of the game for Villa, because he was stood right near me at the end. He pretended not to notice. I don't know why. but we got that defence. You know, we brought Sacco off the bench to replace Kelly. That's how strong the bench was. Ward has been doing well at right back. PVA actually did a tackle. He actually made a tackle.
He doesn't need to make tackles. He got the winner against Man United at Old Trafford. Nick, surely he's a free man for a little while.
Yeah, I know. And he always does that. He always has a few performances where he underperforms, and he'll score a couple of goals over the course of 3 or 4 games, and he's forgiven. And then he'll be a bit rubbish, and then he'll score a couple of goals, and he'll...
Before we talk about, obviously, the massive incident at the big game, I have to get both of your opinions on it. Let's talk about something for Crystal Palace, because the clean sheet was massive, wasn't it? Yes, the most important thing, 3 points. If it's 4-3, 3-2, you got the 3 points. That's all we're after. But the clean sheet, James, how important is that? Nick just mentioned 2 goals conceded in 4 games, but clean sheets, it's always going to help you, ain't it?
Oh, definitely. And I agree with Nick. You know, we haven't had possibly our best centre-backs playing. But now, you know, we've got... before the season started, I dreamt of having Cahill and Sacco being our central defenders. I just felt that on paper they would be the best two. You've got your 2 ex-internationals there, French and English. So I felt on paper those two would be immense for us. And so I was thinking, how is Roy going to get them in the team? And we got Gary in quite early on because of, you know, he spotted a bit of a weakness.
And I'm just going to interrupt you there. What a difference he has made as well. You can tell that he knows what he's talking about. He knows Roy really well. And he's actually been out in the press. He's spoken well of Lucas, saying what a fantastic person he is to have for a club captain. So within the space of 3 or 4 weeks, he's bought into the ethos of the club. And I think that's helping to bind the players together a bit. Carry on.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, you're right. Sorry. But, you know, so we've managed to get Gary in. And, you know, it's hard on Kelly, to be honest with you, because he got injured. But to be honest with you, I wish him well. But personally, if Sacco's fit, I want him in the team. And he got his 20 minutes or whatever it is, and now he's got another 2 weeks to carry on getting fit. Now, with Gary Cahill and Mamadou Sakho at the centre-backs, I think we can only improve. And quite rightly, Nick said, Gaeta's been absolutely brilliant for us, and he's such a calm goalkeeper. I mean, he must give the defence so much confidence. So we've got a fantastic keeper that's on form. We've got two extremely good internationals there, and who cares if PVA, you know, he's got decent defenders that can kind of back him up and chaperone him and say, yeah, you go on forward, you try and get us a goal up there, because we'll cover you, don't worry, we'll shout it, they'll shout, believe you me, Sakho and Gary Cahill especially will probably bellow at him if he's out of position, and it might help improve his game.
Well, that's what you get in Gary Cahill, another leader on a pitch, someone, you know, who's done it at the top level with Chelsea. He's played in numerous international and European games. You know what you're getting at the back there. It was 1-0, it was a clean sheet, it was 3 points. Now let's talk about the incidents in the game, because it could have been so different. Aston Villa, we know their thoughts, very frustrated. They feel aggrieved at the goal that wasn't a goal. Jack Grealish went down, booked for diving. I think it was a foul. I think the goal should have stood, if I'm being just 100% honest with you guys. I think that I'm not quite sure he can get booked for diving when I do think there was contact, it was a foul, and he actually passed the ball to his own teammate in turn. He then went on and scored. The ref has already blown the whistle, so VAR apparently cannot look at the incident once the referee's whistle has been blown. That was new on me. I didn't know that rule, so still we need clarity with VAR there. That's another debate. Firstly, foul or no foul for you two, if you're taking your Crystal Palace hats off, Nick?
He was nudged slightly on the run through, not deliberately.
Not all fouls are deliberate, though.
No, but it was just coming together, which knocked him off balance a little bit. As he went past Cahill, I think he made a meal of it. Now, had Grealish not been throwing himself all over the pitch for the rest of that game, Villa would have had a draw. I believe that he had tried to con the ref so much that it actually worked against him.
Well, that is something that's been thrown around at him, that he does make a meal of it. I actually agree with you in that sense. I don't agree with you that he made a meal of that, because the whole time he looks at the player, he never looked back at the ref, said foul, foul, foul. He dived, he'd give the ball. He was waiting to see what the conclusion was of that particular play. Whether it was deliberate or not, there was contact. In my eyes, that's a foul. I actually think the Wilf was the foul over the Cahill, because he'd give him a nudge there to stumble him.
And
to
a lot of Villa fans thought that it would have been called back for a free kick.
Yeah. But, so advantage should have been played there. That's the confusion there. James, foul or no foul?
Yeah, no. It's. I agree with the ref, actually, on this one. I think he was trying to meal it. He was trying to con the ref, I think. I think you can't start giving fouls for little nudges like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's innocuous.
It's a physical game. I make you right in that
sense. It's a physical game, and you cannot just keep blowing the whistle every 5 minutes because someone has just got a little bit of a nudge on you. It's got to be a bit more firmer than that.
This is my argument, though. I'm not even concerned whether it is a foul or not. I don't think it's a dive. I don't think the ref should be blowing. So I think, in turn, the play should have been allowed to go. The ball's already been played. The Villa goal stands. I don't think it should be a foul.
And then look at it.
No, I just think don't think it's a foul to start. I don't think it's a dive. I think Jack Grealish has managed to get the ball forward and Aston Villa have scored.
I think the worst thing for Jack Grealish is
whether it's a foul or not a foul.
I think he just over elaborated the whole situation and made it into a big dive, and maybe even if they felt a bit of contact, yeah, he could have gone down. But the way he went down.
So then, just to rephrase the question, foul or no foul, but was it a dive then? Yes or no?
I think it was, yeah.
Nick, you agree it was a dive?
I think he made the most of it, definitely.
So a dive?
The dive, yeah.
I'm really surprised at that. I'm really, really surprised. But I appreciate it, and I know you two would be honest. If the shoe was on the other foot, I know you both would.
I'm sitting quite a long way away from that situation.
Mm. What did the fans know at the time in the stands? What was the fans' general consensus?
I don't know
consensus?
That I really exactly saw what happened, to be honest with you, until I looked at the TV. So in some situations like that, you've got to trust the referee. And this is it. And so the referee's made a decision, and they've gone to VAR, and it's not clear and obvious. And you look on social media, and it's 50-50. I mean, from what I've read, it's 50% say he died, 50% say he didn't. Mm. And they're not Palace fans, and, you know, they're neutral.
If we look at the VAR angle, though, Nick, it's very confusing. Once the referee's blown, then we can't look here. Is this, take out that it was Palace. As a VAR, as a stance from VAR, are we like, well, we can't look here, we can look here. What ones do they look at? When is it the ref decision? When is it the VAR room? For you, taking away that it's Palace, you still be like, I'm no clearer on VAR.
Whatever makes it easiest for the fans who are paying their good earned wages in the stadium to understand what's going on. As long as that works, I don't care. I don't give a stuff about the people watching on telly. I want to be in the stadium and know what's going on. That's all. Now, we talk about injustice. If I was a Palace fan, if I was a Villa fan, I'd be gutted. I'd be spitting feathers because, you know, there is an injustice. But that is what makes football brilliant. We are having an animated discussion here. VAR takes that away. Okay, it's brought it in a little bit here. But you want to talk about injustices. Chris mentioned it on the review show, backofthenest.com. You can find it there. I've got to mention that. Otherwise, I'll get the sack.
Plug.
And he said that you want injustice. We, over our lifetimes, we've had two goals scored that have literally gone in the goal, come out again. That is injustice.
I'll be honest with you, Nick. I actually agree with you because football's about drama, the moments, the injustices, those little things. Oh, it was a decision. Oh, it was offside. It was onside. And things being given 50-50 because sometimes it is very grey. It's not all black and white. But the flip side, I think me and you are in the minority because the majority, I believe, don't want the injustices. They want it to be, you know, very much the letter of the law. This is a foul. This is a goal. This is a dive. So those decisions, when your team has been robbed, we don't want that injustice. But I know it does add to it. Is there that argument?
It's another human being sitting in a room watching it on telly, judging it as well.
Do you know? You've got.
We could talk about this all day, James.
I just want to add. I listened to some football commentators on a radio station this week, and they were saying,
James, love sport only.
This 2 week break. They're hoping that the referees are getting together and discussing this. I think if there's room for improvement, I think what could happen is the video assisted referee could say to the referee, can you have another look at it on your own screen by the pitch? Now, apparently, they've tried to avoid that because that's going to add more time to the
delay. Well, in America, in the NFL, managers or head coaches, as they're known, are allowed a challenge flag. It's like a red challenge flag. Like NFL, and they can review, like the DRS system in cricket.
Yeah.
But then is this system where we like, once again, we're stopping the game because obviously we know Dean Smith would have challenged that, and we're losing the flowing momentum of the game, which is what fans are losing because we go to VAR.
But this was a really, really important decision, and I feel that maybe the referee should go back to the man on the pit, the ref on the pitch, and say, look, go and have a look for yourself, just for a, you know,
I think, James, Nick, we're going to be debating something on VAR almost to the end of the season. It's going to go on and on. It worked, we could say, in Palace's favour this week. We know Aston Villa fans feel grieved at that one. But I'm delighted next we are joined by a very, very special guest.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and Nick Gillard. And we are also delighted to say we are joined on the phone by a very, very special guest, Jim Piddock, founder of the Crystal Palace Football Club Supporters Trust. Jim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time, calling you all the way from Hollywood. Very excited to be talking to you tonight. Crystal Palace, it was a slow start, wasn't it, in the Premier League? But two brilliant wins. One up against Man United, which was a very nice result, especially as Crystal Palace had already got that result last year, beating Man City in Manchester. Now it was time to conquer the red half. And of course, the clean sheet and the 3 points this weekend, beating Aston Villa. How pleased are you with Crystal Palace's last two performances?
Obviously very pleased in terms of getting 6 points this early in the season. And by the way, thank you for that introduction. I think, you know, it's way too early to draw any conclusions. I mean, under Hodgson, we're always very difficult to beat, and we don't win by much more than a goal or lose by more than a goal. So it could easily be very different. I was up at Manchester, saw that game, and we played well, but we were also very lucky.
Jim, there's sort of been a mixed feeling with Roy Hodgson at the minute, especially on this show on Love Sport Radio. Fans are, you know, has Roy taken us to a certain level? Has he peaked? How much further can he take us? But obviously the flip argument is that the grass isn't always greener. The feeling is slightly better now with those last two results. But has Roy taken Crystal Palace as far as they can go?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that given the players at his disposal, he's done very well. I think, as I say, they're never going to get clobbered, and they're never going to clobber anybody. And we've got fortunate in the last two games to get 6 points. I mean, I don't mind admitting that. We could have easily drawn against on Saturday against Villa, and we could have lost at United. So it could look very different. But over the course of a season, I think you feel comfortable, if he doesn't have a ridiculous injury list, that Roy Hodgson will get you somewhere in the middle of the table.
Is that enough, Jim? Should we be happy with that?
It is enough. Yeah, absolutely. I think people have to remember where Palace have come from, and we've all seen fans get impatient. You know, at Charlton Athletic, they got, we're not really kicking on. We've been in the Premier League X number of years, and then suddenly they're gone, and they're gone, and they're gone, you know. And so they're finally making some sort of a comeback, but I think you can get, everybody gets sort of caught up with, we've got to do this and do that, but I think survival is the name of the game in the Premier League. And, obviously we would love to come in the top 10, and preferably eighth would be fantastic. But, that would be a great achievement. And it's very possible.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Jim. I think especially us older fans that have been around for a few years, we're just dreaming at the moment. I mean, it's just amazing that we're there, and we've our seventh season in the Premier League. And I think it's very important for us to not get too carried away. You know, we've still got a lot to do with the stadium. You know, we're going to have to invest money in the stands. And the last thing we want is to get relegated. So, you know, I'm all for sort of continuing to consolidate, continuing to sort of, expectations for me would be mid-table this season, maybe a good cup run. I mean, we're out of one cup, so we've only got one left. But I would be happy with mid-table, continuing to improve. But I personally think that, it's time where the club, really start to, improve the stadium facilities. How do you feel about
totally
that?
Agree. Yeah, totally agree. I think it's number one priority. The academy's number two priority. And obviously, underneath all that, we've got to stay in the Premier League. But I think that's a longer-term plan, and you don't want to go out rushing, buying players who aren't right. And, we needed two full-backs and a forward this summer, and we didn't get them. We're in a good position to do so in the next two windows.
We didn't need a full-back. Look at us. We've got the best defence in the league. Had reserve players keeping clean sheets.
Well, you're right. I mean, we're missing the two first-choice centre-halves, and we've got no cover, really, at either full-back position, and we've done extraordinarily well. But, a couple of injuries, and that can get a little desperate.
To be fair, we did get a striker because we signed Ayew, so,
true, but we had him last year.
I know.
We lost two strikers. And
We haven't really replaced Batshuayi, have we? That's the key, I think.
No. And that would have been the one thing that most supporters would have loved to
Absolutely.
See, a Morelos or somebody like that come in who's something different from what we've got.
Jim, were Crystal Palace in a position where they could have replaced the players that they lost? Obviously, they sold Wan-Bissaka this summer to Manchester United, but it felt like maybe Crystal Palace needed to balance the book because not a lot of that money was reinvested. Did they need to rebalance the books, or are they in a position where they can spend that money in January?
No, from what I know, the books are balanced. The question was, how much can you spend on a replacement fullback? Because we didn't know what was going to happen with Wilfried Zaha all summer. So Steve Parrish's hands were tied. He didn't know whether he could go and spend $10 million on a fullback or $40 million on a fullback. Not that we, I think, would ever do that. So it was very, very difficult. And the people we were interested in, a couple of loans particularly, didn't pan out. We weren't able to get them. So there's no point just buying another fullback for the sake of it. We've got, very good choice, first choice right now. And you know, yeah, it would have been great to get a young right back on loan, you know, Rhys James or the fellow at Tottenham, Walker Peters or whatever, but it didn't work out.
Well, Steve Parish did say in an interview this week that he's kind of on a three-year plan for his for rebuilding the squad. What did you make of that?
I think that's absolutely right, and I think that's very smart. I think, you know, there's a couple of, I think, new investors sort of loitering in the wings. It's disappointing, yeah, that we didn't add a couple more over the summer, but it's not the end of the world, and provided we stay injury-free, I think we'll probably bolster in January a little bit. And then next summer, you know, major overhaul, or if Wilfred leaves in January, a major overhaul in January.
And of course, at this time, with Berry going down and going back to 2010, we're still feel lucky enough to be in his position. Going back to your involvement with the football club, your list of achievements is amazing, but for some of us, especially at Back of the Nest Towers, your biggest one is starting the Football Club Supporters Trust. What's happening with that at the moment, Jim?
I'm not really involved on a day-to-day basis. I think the three of us that formed it are kind of honorary directors or something, but it's still going strong. I think they meet, and it was always intended, once the club was sort of taken over by Simon Jordan back in 2000, that it would just stay there as a safety net, as an insurance scheme, and that's what it's remained. You know, I mean, they do get involved with stuff with the academy and things like that, but the main purpose that we set it up for was done, and so it was kind of like, okay, we sort of put it in mothballs and keep it there as an insurance policy.
Jim, just coming back to football matters, obviously the win against Aston Villa this weekend. Roy Hodgson said, you know, Crystal Palace shouldn't feel like they need to apologise to Aston Villa. What happened, happened. Where did you stand on it? Was it a dive from Grealish? Was it a foul? Should the goal have stood?
It was a very harsh decision. The goal shouldn't have stood simply because the referee blew his whistle before it went in. So that they had no choice. Then they couldn't go to VAR because of that. But yes, if that had been Palace, I would have felt hard done by. On the other hand, as a Palace fan, we deserve the 3 points, so they can't feel too hard done by.
Well, there you have it, 3 points for Palace. Jim, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time tonight. We really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to speak to you on the Back of the Nest on the Love Sport Radio. Jim, thank you so much. Jim Piddock there, founder of the Crystal Palace Football Club Supporters Trust. He said he's not really still involved in it, but obviously we did know he found it. How important is something like that for the fans, Nick?
Well, I've been a little bit involved, or starting to get involved with the Palace Supporters Foundation as well, which is Steph, I think we've had her on the show before, and they're organising the Marathon March. Really, really getting involved in the community, getting local people together. And that's been a good thing about Palace ever since I've supported them. I mean, I first went there in 76. They're always doing stuff for locals. So it's good. And they're helping people out of crime. They're getting people into jobs. They're helping people, helping kids who haven't got that much money, making sure they can get to see games. It's just fantastic.
Well, that's what it's about. It's bigger than football. It's about putting it back into the community. Crystal Palace doing a good job of it there. Next, we're going to be looking at that international break. Has it come at the right time for Palace? And unfortunately, we have to look at that disappointing cup loss to Colchester.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. Delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and Nick Gillard. Of course, we were talking about Crystal Palace's fantastic two wins in the Premier League, Man United and Aston Villa. Unfortunately, now we have to talk about that disappointing cup loss in between Colchester. James, shocked at this, are you, James?
I was hoping you were going to just overlook this topic.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be right if we didn't address every Crystal Palace issue. We'll try to make it as quick as we can.
All right, we'll sum it up, yeah. Ten changes.
Oh, we start off with, yeah, go
right,
on the obvious.
Okay, 10 changes.
How fantastic Colchester were.
But, you know, credit where credit's due. They did turn up and really gave it a good shot. You know, fair play to them. They had their chances. Can't say they just sat back. They actually had their chances and they could have won it. We still had a very good side. We've got a good squad now. You know, you can't complain and say it's our reserves, because it's not. These players were playing in the first team the week before, 2 weeks before.
But it was 10 changes. Nick, how serious are Crystal Palace about the League Cup? Did they take it serious? I know 10 changes would say no, but I suppose you still want to progress, or was it like, it's all about the league?
Well, one was Hennessy. He's always going to get the cup games. Sam Wood's played as an emergency right back. He's normally a centre back, which shows about the problems we've got that Jim mentioned and you've mentioned as well, James. Camarasa, it was good to see him start. Quite impressive. Like to see how he'd fit in with everybody else. And he wasn't too bad. Did he come on Saturday? I can't remember if he came on Saturday.
No, he didn't.
He got up and then sat down again, I think. He was one of those. That...
difficult to get him on. But I do agree, it was really nice. And I think he did get involved quite a bit and he had some really good touches. I wonder whether he wasn't up, his fitness isn't right up there just yet. And he needs to get a little bit fitter. Because maybe because of, obviously Cardiff going down, he was a lone player. Maybe he didn't really have a club to go back to get to train with. So I think he's just getting him up to fitness level. To be honest with you.
Yeah, some wag on Twitter had said that the reason he hadn't been playing was because Roy wanted to get all the skill out of him before he'd put him in the first team. But, you know, we take that with a pinch of salt. The other player who did really well was James McCarthy. And I like him. Could have scored on the weekend. And the reason I like him is he said, I've got a call up for the Republic of Ireland. Actually, I'm not going to go. I'm going to focus all my energy at Palace and get embedded with the team and get to know them really well because this is more important to me than... playing for my country, which
I think it's important to it for himself because he's come back from quite a long injury and he's missed a couple of seasons at least. So I think for him, he's got to be very careful. And, you know, he nearly got chopped down the other weekend, didn't he, in a match at Sheffield United? Well, he did get chopped down. I was at the game and it was at that end and it was a horrendous tackle. Well, it wasn't that bad, but it could have been worse than what it was. So he's got to look after himself and he's got to look after his body. And quite rightly, he's saying to himself, you know, let's focus on Crystal Palace and his own, you know, his own fitness.
Well, it was 10 changes. We know Roy would say, yeah, we was trying for the cup, although the team might not have reflected that. But how do fans feel? Take away that you're out and you go, oh, no, we don't really care. Did you want to go through? Did you see Colchester? We should be going through. We're at home, you know. I want to focus on the League Cup. Disappointing to go out or are you just not that fussed?
I would have liked us to have gone through purely for... It's not the end of the world that we are knocked out. Look, put it that way. But I'd like to have gone through purely for the fact that I think it's good to have the second string team getting game time, and it's just keeping them all up to the fitness levels up, and I think that's good for the club as a whole. So yeah, of course I would have liked us to continue, but you know, it's not the end of the world that we're not in it.
Nick, do you feel the same?
Yes and no. I mean, it's good to have a good cup run. It was good to see some different players. It could have been a bit cheaper to get in, to be fair, I had my very first experience in with the Homesdale Fanatics. Never again. I mean, it was brilliant. And there were people 20 years younger than me. Having the time of their lives, there was good banter going on. And they do seem like a good bunch of lads, despite sort of lots of things I've heard about them. For me, the game was more about trying to stay upright and with the jumping up and down. A completely different experience. I just don't know why we didn't go for it more. It was almost like a training match, wasn't it? And again...
Do you mean in the game or with the lineup that was selected?
In the game. It doesn't matter who you got on the pitch. If they don't look like they want to win the game. And that was the difference between sort of Colchester and Villa.
Well, because in stark contrast, you saw what it meant to Colchester when they went through, didn't they? They rushed over to the fans. Yeah. They were absolutely elated. Is it, you know... Not that the players disrespect some of the domestic trophies, maybe the more so minor ones, it's not the FA Cup, but do you just want to see more of a fight? Because you always fight for the pain and punter, Nick. You do want to, like, come on, we've made the effort, it's a Tuesday night, we want to really make a game of this. We just want a little bit more. And like you said, players, stake a claim in this team. Do you know what I mean? You're saying players are turning down international caps to stake a claim. Just give us a bit more fight, give us a bit more commitment. Is there an element of that?
Maybe they struggle to motivate themselves against
these
sort of teams. Because they're paid a lot of money and they don't have to worry too much about it.
Is that something wrong with the game, though?
Maybe they thought it'd be a walk-up. Look, the most exciting part of the game, I stood with DR for the first time ever. Mm. He's out in Turkey at the moment. Recce in for our European tour now, we're fourth. And we know that Brexit's going to render the league over by the end of November. So we might still be in Europe next season if that happens.
You told me he went and saw Sorloth play.
Yeah, well, he supports Fenerbahce, so he went out to see them. He said it was amazing. I'm sure we'll hear more about it.
What? He's not giving up on Palace, is he?
No, of course not. But he said the ultras there, unbelievable. His eyes were stinging for hours after with all the flares and whatever.
Well, sorely missed. Hopefully we'll have him back next week.
DR's mate plays for Colchester. Played for Fylde the year before and came through the books at Norwich. So old school mate. The most exciting part was when DR thought his mate was coming on, but it wasn't him. And that was it.
Did he got a little bit excited and it wasn't to be.
He tweeted it and everything.
Well, it is the international break. Has this come now at the wrong time for Crystal Palace, James?
No, I don't think it has. I think that it's time for reflection. And as you say, you know, maybe we've been a little bit lucky. And we've also got some players that have come back into the team that maybe aren't particularly match fit yet. Thinking of Mamadou Sakho. He only had sort of 20
Wolf
minutes.
Wolf can have another 2 weeks because it's been congested for him, isn't it? African nations, now straight into the Premier League in sort of ever rest and recovery and get back up to speed.
Absolutely. And we can sort of sit back and we can sort of analyse what's happened. And, you know, we've got into the heady heights of fourth position in the Premier League. But let's not get carried away and let's treat every game as it comes. And yeah, I'm hopeful that you know, they all got their heads screwed on, and that we still maintain those clean sheets, hopefully. And we just, but maybe for a striker, maybe it isn't a good time. I must admit,
Jordan Ayew.
As an ex-striker myself,
well,
you don't want to have a two-week break.
When the iron's hot, you must strike. But what can Palace work on in this 14-day break? Is there anything, or you just don't want to get injuries on the international break, or we know we want to get players up to speed? Anything in those first four games, like, right, let's really address the problems that we have had in the four games? There's not been many. You've only conceded two goals and you are in the top four. But anything to work on in this little two-week break?
Passing practice, I think, and also a bit of shooting practice. To have 22 shots and only 5 on target, that is a bit of a worry. And if you do dominate a game like we did against Aston Villa and don't come away with all 3 points because of a goal at the end, which should have, could have possibly have been given, you know, we'd be having a different conversation. My main thing is, though, is the international break has come, which gives us 2 weeks to say that we are currently the best team in London. Listen to me, Spurs. Listen to me, Arsenal. Listen to me, West Ham. Listen to me, Chelsea. You are below Crystal Palace.
What about Cheltenham? What about Brentford? Put it to them all, Nick. Tell them all. You're the best team in London. I thought you were going to list them all.
I wasn't.
I've thrown you.
It's probably no one list.
And I'm just going to big up Bromley because they're better than Cheltenham. They're doing really well in the National League.
Oh, causing a problem. Well, what a note to end on, because Crystal Palace are currently the best team in London. Yay. And this is the best fan show on Love Sport. It's all go, go. We'll see you next week.
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.